Hare Krishna. This is Dhanadhara Swami, if anyone's still there. Just forgot. And it's kind of, I didn't even forgot to prepare, but I could give a little philosophical explanation on it without making any excuses. But it's called the mode of passion. It really affects the mind. On Thursday night, I went into the city for the third birthday party of Yogamaya. Didn't get back till 2 in the morning. And then yesterday, I had a 4-hour seminar in Long Island, which should have taken an hour. Somehow or other, I followed the GPS, and it took me the shortest route, but the shortest route was ridiculous. It took me through Manhattan, through Brooklyn, Myrtle Avenue, every single light. And even though I left an hour earlier than I was even supposed to leave, I got there late. And then driving back last night, and then this morning preparing for a 6-hour seminar. So it's kind of nice. I kind of started the Sangha programs when I didn't have any other faculty to express myself, and I guess I'm resourceful, so I started the Sangha programs to, present Krishna consciousness and give me a forum. It's still the most important thing to me, actually speaking. If I had to sacrifice everything, I'd sacrifice everything but this. Because this is where I really get to express prema bhakti. Frame of bhakti means where I actually get to describe, where people have the frame of reference, the Krishna and his devotees, and what that internal potency looks like, what Vyasadeva actually saw. He actually saw Krishna exchanging with internal potency, and that's what we are seeking to understand and enter. And other seminars I give are on important subjects that are connected to that. And I don't deny the importance, even for devotees, to hear about karma and forgiveness and environment and so many other subjects that I give. I think it's really important. But for that purpose, so that we can become purified enough to hear Krishna's pastimes and actually not only hear those pastimes, but feel those pastimes and become inspired by the devotees in those pastimes and how they love Krishna, which is our objective and the most beautiful thing. So I relish, so much, especially this Sunday class, where I get to speak directly on the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is such a pure text. Dharma Projita Kaita Votra Paramo Namasaranam Satam. It's for devotees. And what is a devotee? One who has no other objective but to please Krishna. And therefore, the books that that person reads are the books that exclusively describe that. And Bhagavatam is militant about that. And that's why Prabhupada translated it, wrote commentaries. That's why it's the books he carried to America. That's why it's the books that gave him faith. When he came to America and he saw his task at hand with the material energy that was described, Prabhupada had just his simple white shoes and, 40 rupees or something, like $5. I mean, he had no money. But his confidence was Srinvata Swa Kata Krishna. Kata Krishna. You talk about Krishna and the beauty of Krishna and the activities of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the name of Krishna, to attract us to ourselves, which is a servant of Krishna. So that's really my life, and actually I'd love to go more and more into that. But at the same time, in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are so many people who don't yet understand that and don't understand the basic concepts of spiritual life. One thing that I've been stressing in my discussions to people, by the way, I have a 6-hour seminar today also, which is I was rushing out the door, knowing that I have to drive into the city and that there's a bike-a-thon and that who knows I'll even get into the city. But so what I'm stressing to people, you know, is really to make a serious analysis of what their objectives and goals are in relationship to becoming satisfied and happy. And I can say even myself how I struggle not to fall in the consciousness that my happiness is ultimately a world that moves around my desires. Because that's gross material consciousness. The world moves around God's desires, which are for the benefit of everyone. Our desires are for the benefit of not even ourselves, actually. Our desires are for the benefit of our temporary body and mind, and you know, not necessarily. Of course, I always make the distinction that we should satisfy our desires. We should make an effort to be integrated and whole, but not with the idea or conception that that will ultimately satisfy me, but as a necessary requirement for the ultimate perfection, which is realizing the eternal soul and awakening within it the inclination to serve God. Which, if that inclination becomes exclusive and sincere, will enable one to become a receptacle for the Bhakt Anand, for the love that's in the world, the love that's in the universe, which is meant to flow from our hearts to the universe, to beyond the universe, to the source of the universe, and in doing so, nourish God and help others. So, I try to make those points. Okay, one second. I just have to call right back. It'll take me a minute. Okay, I'm back. Hare Krishna. The reason why I called back is that somehow or other, you can see how even memory is affected by the mind. Even though I dialed the access code, I have a special access code that allows me to mute the phones of people, I couldn't remember it. I've dialed it 100 times. I couldn't remember it. And then when I gave class, I remembered it. I wanted to get back on, so because I heard people in the background. Well, thank you for waiting. So, and I feel very satisfied doing it, even though really it was kind of a mini little hell. When you're late for a program, the GPS, it took me the short route, which is a stoplight on every block, through Brooklyn, parts I haven't even seen myself, under the, you know, Myrtle Avenue, under the L train or whatever it is. And, you know, but still, you know, even this morning I have a 6-hour seminar and I had to, you know, really concentrate how I'm going to present this. But there was a satisfaction, a real satisfaction, because I'm not doing this for myself. I'm doing this for Krishna, for God, as his will is represented by those who know what he wants because they love him. When you love someone, they will give you their heart and their desires. So it is the desire of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through the Parampara Srila Prabhupada, that we legitimately try to help people by sharing the knowledge. And I have to say, in a detached way. Detached means you're doing your duty and, you know, you respect people's adhikari, their freedom, their level of evolution in their own consciousness, and they can take what they want. And I can't push further, but what I'm seeing is so many people are taking to it. So many people. I did the program in Rockville Center, 2 classes of 2 hours apiece. And the lady there was someone I met in Vrindavan, whose heart and awakening happened while she was in India. She even served some halava, which she said, I said the prayers. So, that's the difficulty. And I can see it very clearly. I guess it's surprising enough. And I don't like I'm just, because I'm not prepared, I'm just rapping off the top of my head in one sense and trying to share with you whatever I feel. When I got to the program, I wasn't actually in the mode of passion at all. I was surprised how good I felt. Then I was thinking, why? I thought I'm staying with Lakshmi Sringa Prabhu and Pataratchani. I'm in their place now. And just the culture of people who cook at home hot meals that are off with love and devotion for Krishna has such an effect on one's health and consciousness. So I thought, despite one side, you know, driving is the mode of passion. And what to speak, my samskaras of being on time and I'm coming late for a program, which... I hate to do. I thought the other, the good association and the right prashadam, you know, kind of counteracted it. It was really counteracted it. You know, there's many factors in life that affect the mind. And that's also one of the main things that I kind of stress when I'm discussing with people, and it's such a practical point that the mind is so malleable. It's so malleable, and a proper culture, proper environment realizes that. And therefore, it's called the brahminical culture. It's guided by people who have knowledge. And what is knowledge? One aspect of knowledge is people know what affects the mind and how it affects it. And you know, the whole purpose of any teachings, purpose of teachings is to give you knowledge and knowledge on what to think and how to act and how to make choices so that the mind will be as much as practically possible in the mode of goodness. So the mind will serve as a lens that sattva means the nature of being. It's what Professor Bryant translated the Yoga Sutras. So you think about it, when things are in goodness, they are basically the way they should be. In one sense, it's just like the morning time. Nothing has been, you know, it's natural as much as possible the time of day. Then the day starts and everything becomes transformed to an extent that you can't see nature. The intense activity. So, sattva means like the mind is a lens. So, how should the mind be? It shouldn't be distorted and it shouldn't be soiled, because if it's soiled or distorted, one's perception through it is affected so much. That's why also I'm trying to reevaluate what I'm doing, such a balance between the endeavor to give something to others and the endeavor to be in a state of consciousness that what you give is actually pure. So you have to be very careful in terms of the sacrifices you make to teach. Because in a lot of senses, the medium is the message. And one of the primary medium is the person and his consciousness. And that's what becomes communicated through a person's understandings and conviction. Anyway, these were just my thoughts about, I meant to prepare. In fact, Mahamuni, I spoke to him briefly on the phone. He reminded me of the class. I said, thank you, otherwise I'll forget. And I forgot anyway. I even saw a message by Mahatma apologizing on the internet for forgetting his class when I read it, because he gives some kind of phone class too. When I read it, I kind of empathize with him, but I could also understand, okay, welcome to the world of traveling and teaching. Anyway, this morning I'm going to be giving a 6-hour seminar on bhakti. And I was really meditating on how I'm going to present it, because, you know, some of these people, it's new to them actually. Although it's Yoga Maya, so it generally has a higher level of involvement of the participants, just because of the nature of the people that run it are so nice and devotional. So the first thing I want to explain to the students is that I really want it to be dialectic, that they can ask questions and there can be explanations, because in most circumstances, you're not really sure what people know. And if you're not sure what people know, it's very hard to know how to explain things to them. Isn't that the first part of communication? You have to know what your audience knows. So I want to make sure it's dialectic, and most of our spiritual texts are dialectic. And it's a very interesting phenomenon, because the questions of the student allow the teacher to understand his mind and thus add in his answers components of understanding by which the student perhaps can't understand, and that it doesn't just take one answer. It takes a dialectic, a discussion. So I just don't want to give a lecture and then find out that people haven't understood what I said. Nor do I think in these teacher trainings where they're obligated to give a certain amount of time to get the accreditation doesn't facilitate the best educational system of learning. I think the best thing is to do it in this way. And at the same time, I have a plan, because I want to describe how I came to Krishna consciousness. And that will lead to a discussion of Shraddha, because bhakti is Shraddha. Shraddha is, as Prabhupada said, your trust in sublimity. I really love that definition. I've been using it. Your trust in sublimity. Where does your trust lie? So how did my trust change? It changed with good ideas that I heard, which touched my own concrete but limited understanding of the world. It spoke to that. And it gave me an experience of those conceptions practically applied, which awakened with me a faith in this universal love, this devotional surrender, as my faith. As my faith, as my trust. And it's really, it must be a religious experience. Otherwise, how have people in the circumstances that they've been through, both intellectually and in terms even of the people and institution that embody that, and so many challenges that people have, how did they remain their faith? I don't think it's just an intellectual concept, although that must be there, and doubts have to be cleared. Otherwise, the intellectual conception can cut off the experiential one and the remembrance of it. But something's very powerful put into the heart, and that's why I appreciate Prabhupada so much, because something was so powerfully coming through him. Many of you are from New York. On the 20th, I'm going to speak at the program that Lakshmi hosts in 26 Second Avenue. It's very intimate. And, of course, with Bhattarajani cooking, it is the best prasadam, very intimate program. So I'm going to speak about Srila Prabhupada meditations. And those 2 days, we'll also be hosting. Ami is going to help me. Very special lady from Iran. I'm always afraid that put anything on the internet what these countries think. But anyway, has hosting some guests too. That's really nice. Wonderful. Because I have to rush off to the city. Anybody like to say hello? Come in.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, both. Yeah.
I'm just happy that you made it through Myrtle Avenue. I'm just so happy that you made it here from Myrtle Avenue in Brooklyn. I'm just so happy that you are able to survive Myrtle Avenue in Brooklyn and make it to the class here today.
Do you know what Myrtle Avenue is?
I have an idea.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You can't believe. It was like under the train tracks, you know, the trains, and, you know, the narrow streets, right, and the lights. And you know what I'm saying? If you go 1 kilometer, that's 10 blocks. You know how long it takes you to 10 blocks with lights and stopping and anyway, my drive.
I was thinking more about the unsavoriness of the neighborhood.
Oh, that was just watching TV. I did go. I remember I did go through some. I went through on the way back, though. I took a better route. I went on Atlantic Avenue through Bedford-Stuyvesant. That was a better route.
It was? Oh my God! That's
because it goes so much faster. It's a much better highway.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And
yeah, I think it's just as unsavory, but with Myrtle Avenue, you get to absorb it more.
Yeah, you don't move. You don't move. There were streets I never heard of, you know. Yeah. And even going from the Holland Tunnel to the Williamsburg Bridge.
Oh, my God.
Through Canal Street.
Oh, my God.
It just never ended. And that was, but because, you know, Gail, I always arrive on time, right? And I left an hour earlier. I still only arrived 15 minutes late. And I was able to call the people who were very gracious so that they knew I was coming. Okay, I better go now, but thank you all for those of you that waited on the call. I appreciate it. I'll try to be a better boy next time, not again. Okay, thank you. Once you cope with you.